Good afternoon. This is the Safe and Safe Country podcast and me, its author and host, Alina Frolova. In this podcast, we're talking about the security in like a broader context, security of the countries, of Europe, of Ukraine, of the war, which is going on in different layers. And we will speak today about one of our partners who is playing the crucial role in supporting Ukraine, about France. And my guest today is Christine Dugon-Clément, geopolitical analyst, associate researcher specializing in strategies of Finland, cyber, and artificial intelligence. Christine is also one of the heads of the Conference on Security, which took place in Paris not so long ago. Christine, welcome.
Thank you for inviting me.
Christine, let's start from the conference, which you just held not so long ago in Paris. We've been discussing with you before today and yesterday that the geopolitics of Europe changes a lot. And I think that this was the conversations which you had at your conference. And the Paris now is playing like a very crucial role in changing the European understanding of the security and understanding participation of the Europe and France in the war which is happening against Ukraine. So give us some feeling of what's going on in France.
First of all, I think that we had to put on the table that France realized and know and is really very aware that the full-scale invasion of Ukraine is a conflict that is going far beyond the geographical border of Ukraine. It was what have been said by President Macron, saying, okay, it is the global security with at stake. It is even a threat for Western countries because Russia is in a very bellicist, in a very aggressive behavior. And if I go back a little, something like at the end of last year, we make as a new edition of doctrinal paper, a strategic paper, with names the National Strategic Review. Basically, it have been rewrite in quite an emergency, or maybe not an emergency, but because of the evolution of the context, of the strategic and of the security of the context that we are living and Ukraine especially experiencing, sadly. And one thing which was really important, it's France explained that influence, it's one of the top strategic issues. And in that paper, they call for collaboration in between the different layers of state and nations, meaning private organization, meaning business and industry firms, meaning social society, defense, of course, and interior security. And in the year to come, we faced a huge restructuration into the military school based in Paris, who is gathering a lot of research centers, think tank and else, something like 20 entities. So it's quite huge. And they were all gathered into the Academy of National Strategy and Defense. And the head, the General Durieux, decided to create the first Paris Defense and Strategy Forum that was held last March, what we were talking about. And the main idea of this forum was to put together academics, experts, operational industries in order to dig in subject of interest, a strategical one, but in being like very operational, not forgetting academics research, having an overview of what is happening. For my part, I was in charge of the academic research conference, which was something like six round table. And we decide to choose and to abort a very wide subject, meaning a new technology and influence into context, which is really very disturbed. But on the other hand, you had different round table and somewhere directly connected with the Ukrainian war that we are all observing, facing, and how we can manage, how could we reinforce the help, how we can coordinate. Some were more on NATO, on joint operation. Some other were on the financial point of view of the cooperation of the sanction and else. Other were on the energetics topics, because there is something that is understood now. It's what Russia is doing and what are the new conflicts, I mean, an evolution of the new conflict. They are not just only cinetics. They are not only dealing with military things, even if it is what is costing life. But you have an effect of jumping from line to lines. So from economic points to social points to, let's say, even trading things, and to militaries. So you are jumping from one layer to another. And it was the idea to try to cover everything and to break the borders that you usually have, making that people are not speaking altogether and don't have a clear view of what is really happening.
Okay, and this change of policy of France, the France is well known for its strategic thinking. First of all, you have a classical schools, especially in security and defense, which many people refer to in their like academia work and practical work. And you said that this is changing. And do you see any difference in the war which is happening now? I mean, that's a principal difference from the wars which happened before. And should we imply some more innovative approach? I mean, not only technologies, but the how you feel
the mindset,
and mindsets towards this war.
I think there is something very interesting because they are kind of characteristic of what is evolving. First, because of the technology, you talk about that. Army are facing kind of transparency on the ground because of satellites, because of new technologies.
Because of TikTok also.
So it's very complicated to move, let's say, I don't know, any units with discretion, in secrecy. You have to deal with this kind of technological transparency of the battlefield, which is something that we had to deal with at now. You were talking about TikTok on social networks. It is part of it because everybody, more or less, had a smartphone. So you can make your own video and you can send it on the net. So you can give information, even if you are not very aware that you are giving this kind of information. That was a part of the development and of the rise of the OSINT, open source intelligence. Now is golden hour, if I may say, with the Russian invasion in 2022, which is interesting. I mean, something is, we had to be clear with that. I mean, Ukraine had a main role and a main importance. Why? Because since the very beginning of the Donbas war in 2014, Ukrainian had to deal with disinformation, with fake news, with deterrency, with deception, which are classical way of Maskarovska and else. So they created networks and skills and know-how of people who are dealing with OSINT. Why? In order to make debunkerization of fake content and being in capacity to say this is authentic, this is credible or not by geolocalization and lots of things. So when the Russia go on the aggression on an open face, because they were already underground before, but, you know, always hiding in between different proxies, you already had people who had skills, you had networks, who were in capacity to be active since the very beginning. And it was really very useful. And all these groups, just to say, they enriched their skills and competence during the Syrian conflict where Russia was involved too. So they create huge database that they can use in order to debunk, to check, and to authenticate content. So this is something that we had to deal with, and which is important. It's Russia is deploying full informational warfare. They are using, it's a revival of the cognitive warfare that lots of huge states are working on at now, because perceptions are also a battlefield. Why? Because of the perception, you can change the decision-making of everybody, of civil society, if you are not supportive to your country, and of decision makers, of governments. So this was a huge topic of interest. And this is a fight that we are observing. And we knew that since the attempt of interference in the US presidential election in 2016, the Cambridge Analytica. So lots of Western countries realized that it was a real threat for their democratic process. But no, they are facing that it is used into the society in different ways. Some are very opportunistic, meaning you've got an event, not always prepared or else that happens, and you can use it in order to increase the division into a population, to increase distrust. And there is a long-term operations that aims at framing the perception of a social group. That could be a full population, but that could be like more little social groups, like opposants, like even people who are gathered by their hobbies, you know. You can target this kind of social group, and it's quite easy to do, because if you've got like little skills using the internet, you can make a targeting for this or this social group. And in that way, you can try to make a framing of the perception. And one thing that I think that we had to be aware of is that Russia is trying to expand the war and to create a multi-crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And why is that? Because and I can talk for Western and for French people, it is always very complicated to deal with one complex situation, one crisis. Mm-hmm. But if you are making a demultiplication of the crisis, the probability of freezing the capacity of decision-making increase. And that's why we are facing an increase of the horizontal pressure, we may say, and the demultiplication of crisis. And sometimes you are invited in some fields where you would have preferred to avoid it. But that's why we observed, and it's not by chance if Russia put a special interest in March 2022, so at the very beginning of the invasion they started in Ukraine, in spreading like memes, pro-invasion memes on the MENA area, Middle East and African countries, and not on European countries.
Yeah.
No, because I think that they didn't expect European countries to react so quickly and so firmly and all together in the first weeks and in the first months. And for the European Union, I mean, it's very, very quick.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's an administration. You are in a suprastructure, which is, because of its size, could be quite slow. And that was not the fact. So they changed their mind and they were focusing on this different area. And it's not by chance if they ask for a blind vote on the condemnation of the invasion of the United Nations, because they tried to make a framing. And if ever you were voting in a blind way, maybe some countries could be less shy to express something if you don't know who they are. So it was in that way, because they are creating an axis of narratives who is carrying the idea of alternatives.
Yeah, that's a very like a hidden way, let's say so, of influence, yes? And how you evaluate the current influence of Russia in France, for example? Do you see some kind of specific points which they are targeted, or specific group, maybe politicians, maybe military, which can influence on decision-making on political level, for example?
The thing which is always very complicated with influence operation is that we are always in reaction.
Yeah,
because
you always see them after.
After, yes. Mm-hmm. So it is something which is very difficult to monitor and to evaluate, is the effect induced by this kind of operation. But in France, and thanks to Viginum, which is a structure with in direct connection with National Secretary of National Defense, sorry for the translation, they realize and they found different operation led by Russia. The Doppelganger one, in which during something like 1 year, Russia create like clones of mainstream medias in order to spread reputational attack on Ukraine and to try to divide the states members of the European Unions. We had another one quite recent, which is for me very interesting. It's called Matryoshka, where they try to overwhelm the fact checker. And it's a win-win operation for them, because basically those false accounts, these sock puppets, they are tending requests to fact-checker or the mainstream medias and else, saying, oh, we want you to check this information, which is basically a fake one. And if you said no, they can say, you know, they can fuel like complotism narratives. You see, that is censorship. They say that they want to make fact-checking, but they don't when we are giving things. So it's a kind of win-win. And on the other hand, if ever you said, okay, I am going to fact-check these things, you cannot be, at two places at a different time. So it's kind of overwhelming. So that was really interesting. And lately, we had like something called Portal Combat. It is a network of something like 193 websites created in order to answer to each other, in order to create a kind of virality of some narratives. And last but not least, maybe, we observe what we called unreliable artificial intelligence-generated news website. And we had some networks of something like 500 websites who are producing in 15 different languages narratives that could be created using generative AI and LLM, which increase the speed of production of the narratives in order to spread, contents who are in the line of what the Kremlin geopolitical goals are at the end. And it's interesting because we are talking about 15 languages. So French, of course, Italian, German, English, of course, but also Thai, also different language of the southeast of Asia. So they are trying to making something like very wide and spreading this kind of thing. That's why I was talking about creating this axe of alternatives.
You have very interesting name of your dissertation. From what I see, this is impact of digital strategies on decision making in extreme situation based on case studies of military teams. And this is actually what we observe all the time as an operation of influence on our soldiers on the front line. And there are some cases which are not, of course, like a public one, but which can like lead to misleading of units or leaving the front line or something like that. Do you have some special attention now to everything what's going on in Ukraine? Do you have some case studies or maybe the influence on the command of the French army?
That's something that we try to observe. It's always quite complicated because in the dissertation that you mentioned, thanks to you, I made an observation on very specific kind and quite smart and discreet kind of operation. Basically, when you are dealing with militaries or fighters, I mean, people who are putting their family and their own else and life at risk, basically, you have very high values. Those values, if we are dealing with militaries, it's pretty easy to know them because they are in all the website. It is the code of the soldiers, and they are more or less the same for all the army in the world. Their ranking will change, but loyalty, but, you know, courage, but et cetera, et cetera. And we observed a kind of operation where they were increasing these core values. And when you are, once again, putting your life at risk, this value that could be cognitive, because in a way, yeah, you learned it, but they became affective. They became a part of your own perception, of your own personality. It is what is making you behaved. Okay. So we observed a first waves of operation where they increase these kind of things through, I mean, cantons who are not directly linked with military things, with security situation. Why? Because if I am talking to you about, I don't know, loyalty, and if I am giving you an example of a football player that have been recruited by a very little team, but this very little team help him to become, you know, the first, the top football player and sustain his family and else. And when he's a star, big club ask him for recruitment. And he said, no, because I am loyal to my team. There is nothing to do with security. There is nothing to do with the war. There is nothing to do with Russia. So in a cognitive way, you are not protecting yourself. You are not making, you know, that step forward in order to see and say, maybe that's not clear. So you had these kind of things targeting these core values. And in a second waves, you have contents that could target this kind of population, but by different ways, and social networks were very interesting. And especially if ever the one who is forwarding the information is someone that you trust, meaning that you know in the real life, or that you trust because you recognize something of you in him. So he's another soldier, so he's another player, or things like that. And Russian, there's still a lot of website, and it's very cynical, and I'm sorry to mention it, but also stealing the account of people who were dead on the front line. So that's what they do. And of course, if you know each other, I am sending you something. You believe that's me, so you are not, you know, in a protective way. And in that content, we were mostly wrong or deforming. And sometimes, you know, they are making like 20% of truthing and 80% of false, depending on the proportion. And they were putting these values, they increase at default. But in the commandment line, what was the reaction? In psychology, we call that cognitive dissonance, meaning that into your brain, into your head, the strongest of the cognition will reject the other. When you know the personal value of someone, when you make like doping them artificially, you had not a lot of suspense of who is going to win. So basically this information is reject, but at the same time, what is impacted, it is a trust into what was at stake. So commandment line, so government, so it depends. The final effect, it's not always creating a specific action like, okay, I want you to drink that glass of water tomorrow at 5, you know. No, it's just creating chaos because the people who are impacted, basically, they are not behaving as expected. And that could be different things. Disobedience, okay. Overreaction or underreaction. in both cases, when you are dealing on a strategical point of view, this could impact your capacity to deploy your own strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And it is really helpful when you are on the other side, because you are destroying this capacity of strategy deployment.
Yeah, very interesting case. And the another issue, which like coming back to the attitudes in France, yes. So in the beginning of the full-scale invasion, we saw that President Macron was addressing that we need to negotiate, that Ukraine shouldn't fight, that we need just like to find a way how to continue negotiations. Now he is in very, let's say, active position saying and playing this strategy of the ambiguity, strategic ambiguity. And at the same time, yesterday, for example, Ukrainian media were covering very actively some kind of research which was made in France, and where it is said that more than 50% of young population who can be potentially mobilized is ready to be deployed in Ukraine. I mean, does it mean that the president is just following the moods which are in society, whether really there is so big support of the new policy which declared by the president, or this is just like a different facts which are not lying in one picture?
I mean, France since 2014 have been very involved in what happened in Ukraine, and some action and some decision could have been discussed. Yes, we know that, of course. But since the very beginning of the full-scale invasion and since the first hours, I mean, France and even the parliaments have been very clear and very supportive with Ukrainian. Of course, they would have preferred to save life and not having to face this conflict. But I don't think that we can say that they asked to Ukrainian not to defend themselves and not to fight themselves, because since the very beginning, they've been very supportive, even if kind of ambiguity, because the idea, I think, but once again, I'm not in the God's secrets, you know, was to try to find an option, which was maybe quite elusive, because Russia is not respecting its own treaty, because basically if they had, and we can talk about the United Nations Charter and the Article 1, they would have not started the invasions. Okay, the research that you mentioned, if it is the same, was published by the IRSEM, who is part of the military school.
Yeah.
And it was explaining, I read some parts, but not the whole part, because I was with you yesterday.
Yes.
But the question is not exactly asked that way. They were asking, if ever France security is at stake, would you be ready to?
Mm-hmm.
It is not exactly the same.
Yeah.
What was nevertheless really interesting, as far as I've read of it, and once again, I don't have the time to read the extensive review, it's that, I mean, young people in France were really aware of what is happening in Ukraine, even if some could be sensitive to some complotist narratives.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, they are aware. Yeah, they are involved. Yeah, if ever, but the point is, the other question could be, what do you esteem is...
What is the threat?
Yeah, what is the threat for French security? So this study, as far as I've seen, is really very interesting. And to be honest, I think that I'm going to read it line by line and with all the attention it deserves on my way back. I think it is interesting, but we had to be very careful with what is explained. And when you are a leader in government, of course, you are dealing with your own population, because you are the representative of your population, thanks to the democratic process. So that's what you have to be in connection with. Nevertheless, at the very beginning of the declaration of our president, it was sometimes complicated for French people, because we have to go on the explanation, to go on explaining why. Because for some it was like, but what is the point? We are not personally at risk. We are very supportive. We are sending some weapons. We try to be, I mean, for, you know, the honest man and the honest woman in the streets, as we used to say. So this is something that we had to dig in and to be very attentive, because we had to go on the explanation, not being maybe too conclusive of these kind of things. Because, I mean, as far as I read, the question was if French security was at risk. So it is not exactly the same.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. What percept as a risk? Because what we discussed, for example, for already not only during the last attacks of Russia at infrastructure in Ukraine, that there are some missiles and drones, for example, which are crossing the border of the NATO countries. and NATO has like an official right to react. But we never saw this reaction. I mean, the military reaction can be interception, it can be air defense, but nothing happened. So where is this like a thin line of threat, which considered to be enough to react military?
I mean, the declaration was if ever Russia is pushing into one NATO member country, NATO will react. But if they are voluntarily pushing, and we know that Russia is always, you know, dancing on the red lines.
Yeah.
And it's very dangerous game for everybody. And I think that we are to keep in memory that each time Russia tests the limits, they did it with Georgia. They did it with Crimea.
Yeah.
They did it in the Donbas war, using proxies and, you know, like, once again, sock puppets, openly starting an invasion in Ukraine. And each time, for the case that I mentioned, like Georgia, like Crimea, they observed the reaction of the Western country. And after this observation, they reevaluate the capacity of reaction, what are our red lines or not. They replenish and they push a little more. And each time it is what they are doing. And this is why we have to be very careful. And this is why it has been said that Russia is a threat for the global security and that Western countries had to admit it and to keep that in mind.
Just to give some kind of context to our listeners, that yesterday we've been at the panel at the second Black Sea Security Conference. And we've been discussing the political dimensions of this war and influence and how the Black Sea region is influencing the security situation in Europe and in the world. And there were like a few different points. We'll have a lot of elections this year everywhere. Mm-hmm. Yes, including mm-hmm. the European Union. And more than 4 billion people are electing or something like that. Even I think that even more are electing the governments or representatives this year. And the configuration of the political system can be changed. There is a rising of populism. Mm-hmm. And yesterday we have this discussion. One is taking it seriously. Someone is taking that the situation is not so drama as we see it now. So from your point of view, what would be the configuration for the next period? And how will it influence at the building up new security configuration or restoring the old? What would be the choice?
We are differencing. We know that elections, I mean, great targets when you want to influence it. And especially when we are speaking about the European unions, if you can push some parties that are pro-Russian or at least not openly, but at least who are anti-European Union mm-hmm. for different reasons. And basically, it's populist and nationalist. And we know that we had a rise of these political parties in different countries in Europe. And we observed that in France, too. I mean, just see our last presidential election and the results left of the right wings and the radical parties. What is complicated is making an evaluation of the real impact of the interference that we detect into mm-hmm. the decision-making of the voters. As we said, we are always in reaction. So as a researcher, was what we really need to add a very evaluation of the impact of the weight into the final decision-making is having, let's say, on a specific sample, mm-hmm. like different metrics, observing the operation and making the metrics just after, in order to be in capacity to say, okay, it is just this or different variables, mm-hmm. because we are all evolving in a very complex environment and more complex environment. Nevertheless, we know that this kind of operation will happen. We observe in Slovakia something, but I'm sure that you heard about that, deepfake, an audio deepfake, who were spread on social networks, something like 24, 28 hours just before the voting day. And it is very interesting because usually you cannot have any political declaration into those days, but we were on social networks. It was like a leak and we don't know if it was right or wrong. So social networks said, okay, they didn't cut it off for that reason. So this is something that we can observe. The candidate lose, but because of that, and what is the impact of this deepfake, this audio deepfake at Honestly, we don't really know. The point is, going back to, if ever we've got many different parties who are anti-European Union, who are, let's say, in sympathy with Russia for different reasons, ideologic, financial, or anyway, that could at least slower the decision-making in the European Union. And this is something that Russia is betting on. It's always betting on time, on the attrition, because time is running out. So if ever they just succeed in slowing the decision-making, the support, the supply of ammunition, that's for them very interesting. So of course, they will try to deal with this kind of thing. The question is, how are we going to react? I remember in 2017, the Commissioner of Justice of the European Union declared that the risk of interference in election or democratic process at risk at a level that they have never experienced before. And we were in 2017. In France, we had leaks during the elections. So we know that we had this kind of risk. That is something that we can observe in other countries when we want to, when some narratives were enhanced thanks to architectures using social networks. Yes, but not only local press, radio, because when you are talking about some African countries, radio is a very good way to come into in contact with the targets. So yeah, it is definitely a subject of interest. And basically, they can also use what we say disturbed contexts that pre-exist in order to raise anger of people because of, I mean, domestic issues that we can have, like taxes level, like inflation, like security and anything, in order to enhance dissatisfaction of what have been done and making like, okay, there is alternatives.
Yeah, the situation looks like very complicated. And we know from one point of view, we have this like a democratic community of like-minded partners where Ukraine is also belonging. And we have Russia and its partners. And sometimes it seems that their approach is more productive, let's say so. They're reaching their goals, but at the same time, it's difficult to believe that the Russia and their like supporters can overcome this huge economy, this huge like I don't know, history of building up democracy. And there is no answers. There are questions. What is your like a vision for where we can make better and what we should do to like to make these lessons learned and to improve our policy of protecting democracy? Because Ukraine now doing this physically, yes, but what other countries can do to protect the democracy in, I don't know, some other cognitive way?
That's a huge question. So first, being really supportive with Ukraine, because as you said, they are physically defending. But for the other, first, being pragmatic and realistic. You know, I love fairy tales, like everybody, but we have to wake up. And the world is not a fairy tale. So you cannot defend yourself if you are not realizing what are the risks. So we have to be very realistic, very pragmatic on that. We have a lot to do in order to make sensitization and education for all the population, because we are always talking about the younger, you know, saying, okay, because they are really very connected. They are the one who are the more at risk of being influenced. Some studies show that elderly are very targeted and could be very sensitive to these kind of things, depending of the narratives that we are spreading. So we have to be really very careful. I mean, fact-checking and OSINT was really very precious in order to fight. Even if, and again, we have to be realistic, if you are facing someone who is very pro or very con, you can't make it change his mind. What was interesting, it was the way that into the US election interference, they target people who were not decided. You know, and basically, if we are making an observation with academic studies, it is said that you've got something like 15 to 20% which are pro, 15 to 20% who are radically cons, the one that won't change their mind. But there is a biggest part of 60 to 70% who are not completely sure. And it is this parts that we had to target us in order to explain what is at risk, to give them like, it's like rules of hygiene on what you are consuming as data and as else. I think that we had to be very careful and to go on the AI development and the technology, because it's always, you know, the thief and the policeman. But we had to go on for creating algorithm and techniques in order to fight disinformation. Because, I mean, new technologies, they are not the actor. They are just the tools.
Yeah.
You know, if I got a screw, I can decide just to use it in order to fix something in my place or to kill my neighbor with. Mm-hmm. It is not because of the tool. So nevertheless, we are not to give up on that part. And there is something that could happen and that we had to take in action. It's maybe a risk of kind of auto-trolling, because we are using more and more AI and kind of generative AI. You can talk about Gemini, ChatGPT, and else, and others who are less famous and less ethically ruled, let's say. And the point is, those AI are using the internet like a used data set in order to create things. So first, AI could have hallucination. So explaining thing or giving, they are not explaining. They have not, you know, a will, a personal will. They are not human at no. And they can create things that have no sense. And they can create what you are asking them to do. Okay. Because it's just a statistical model who is evolving by reinforcement of your own, let's say, satisfaction. Okay, you had what you say. Okay, this, and it will fit the algorithm. The point is, the most false content, the most alternative to the truth you can find on the internet, this is all part of the data set who will be used by the other AI. So you had the possibility and maybe a risk of kind of auto-trolling or self-trolling because of content created for disinformation and by hallucination. So this is something that we had to be aware of. And I think that each time that you are reacting like with your guts, you are at risk because you are not taking the time or taking a step forward in order to analyze things. And I know that it is very complicated because the environment speed enhanced. And when we are dealing with emotions, of course, we are overreacting. But our emotions are also targeted by the contents that are shared, especially because in that way, we are not using the filter of our brains, of the things that you can think, you can dig in, you can make research. So we are reacting and we are not in thinking. So these are the things that we had to be aware of and to take care of. And to do so, we had to react in networks, even for fact checkers, because it is something very interesting. When you are fact checkers, you've got lots of requests that are popping into your email. Which one do you choose to fact check? It depends which area are you in contact with. And if you are not taking in account what are the particularity of the population of a place? And I mean, if you are a fact checker in Brussels, but you don't know how Ukrainians are thinking or feelings, or Nigerians, or Brazilians, maybe for you it makes no sense. Okay, that's not relevant. But in a specific context, it is. So we had to create kind of networks with experts who are in direct connection with the ground in order to help them to say no. This one is interesting for those people. For you, it's not ringing a bell, but for them, it is definitely very interesting and very important.
Christine, we have a time limit, so I need to thank you for this very interesting conversation. And I think that this last advice about you need to think, it can be applied to every person and to every government, that we need to put more brains in the process. And especially now when we are all in risk and we are all in risk in moving this war into the global war. So let's make what we can, and the thing is easiest way, it looks like, what we can do. Thank you so much for conversation, and thank you, friends, for supporting Ukraine in this war.
Thank you for your invitation, and So go on your fight. I know it's so costly and you are really brave. So thanks for everything.
Thank you. It was a Safe and Safe Country podcast, and I'm its host, Lina Frolova. The podcast is a joint project of the Center for Defense Strategies, Ukrainskaya Pravda, and Media Center Ukraine. You can find us on all the resources of Ukrainskaya Pravda, as well as the largest podcast platforms, Apple, Google, Spotify, Safe and Safe Country. It depends on each of us how soon the prefix on will disappear.